American DOW tells how we crack and torture in the North Vietnamese prison camps. This is followed immediately by a sequence of Vietnamese Viet Cong female agents saying how she didn't crack under torture. And this gives the impression that even the communist females had more willpower and endurance than the very best of our men. I think it's a very false statement. It just means that we never mastered torture or our allies never did, to the extent of North Vietnamese.
Good. We're going to ask for a pause after each one of these statements so that it's easier to cut. Did you want to go beyond that in terms of a general statement, then, of the portrayal of the enemy fighting force versus the American fighting force?
Yes, that was the intent of the
statement. But you might want to say that more generally as well. Pause first, and then just...
Well, generally, the American soldiers are shown in films praising them. And we're told the Viet Cong were native to the soil, they were able to move, they knew the territory better, and we were given the general impression they were better fighters than we. Most of the American soldiers fought old men, old women, and children, and weren't very good at that.
Okay. Tend to focus your eyes on me rather than ranging them too far afield.
In fact, let's do that one again.
Just tell me when you want to start this week.
Just pause and go.
When American soldiers are shown in the films, they're generally praising the enemy. They claim that the Viet Cong, for instance, had been native to the soil. I better start holding it. I'm getting a little confused.
That should be
okay. All right. When American soldiers aren't shown engaged in frivolous and fleshly pursuits, they're praising the enemy. And we're generally told that the communist soldiers were hardy, a noble peasant army that was very difficult for us to fight. And this gives the general a false impression that we were legionaries fighting in an unjust war that we had no interest in winning, as far as the American combat soldiers are concerned. But the fact is that it was mostly us who fought at a disadvantage against very highly trained, very well-disciplined troops who generally have more firepower and better maneuver than we did. I think under those circumstances, the American soldier who won almost every battle he ever engaged the enemy in did extremely well as any ever have done.
Good. You spoke at your introduction of the whole question of the morale problem the program suggested that this was extraordinary and unusual and unfortunate, but in fact, it's human nature, especially by 1970 when there was this great reluctance to be the last one killed. I think something on that.
Well, by 1970, everyone had come to realize that the United States wasn't in Vietnam to win the war, and no soldier in his right mind wants to be the last person to die in the war. This was particularly true of men during the last couple of months of their one-year tour, and it wasn't confined just to 1970, but it's an observable phenomenon from the very earliest period of our engagement in Vietnam. So I think that rather than making a point out of it, it's a fact of human nature, and there's nothing derogatory in that at all. So the feeling made, I think, a very big point.
Very good. The relation to Frank, if you have watched the PBS program, you might expect.
Well, fragging was a problem in Vietnam. In 1969 to 71, there were 730 incidents, which 83 resulted in deaths. Generally, these were incidents that were perpetrated against officers and non-commissioned officers, usually people that were either ineffective or unpopular with the troops. But I say that given the fact that murder would have been easy to get away with in the combat zone relatively easy, and that the troops were the most heavily armed population we've ever had, that the incident of bragging, instead of showing decline in discipline, is extremely low and speaks very well of the discipline of the troops that were in country during that time.
Right. The next point had to do with racial polarization.
Make sure you keep speaking right towards John. Not the golden here. I haven't addressed yet, right?
Okay. I'm just thinking, in some ways, good to have these points short, and we want to hit everything, but at the same time, to have too many little pieces will allow us to pull things together. Let's deal with them separately, and then let's try to get one comment which tries to pull together all of these in a...
Okay,
in a
sure. I'm thinking about that.
Good.
As a wrap-up statement.
Sure. All right, so drug abuse.
Well, there was drug abuse. Yeah. At the same time, there was drug abuse in American society at large. And up through at least 1971, it had no impact on our combat readiness. In fact, I think a survey that was done at the time in 1971 indicated that the 75% of the soldiers interviewed had done drugs prior to coming to Vietnam, and 20% had done heroin prior to the time they came to Vietnam. The fact is that when drug abuse was seen among the troops as endangering the lives of the men themselves, the users were disciplined by the troops, and most of the drug abuse went on in non-combat areas.
Good. Did we do racial polarization?
Not yet. There was also racial polarization in Vietnam, just as there is everywhere else in our society. And it was no worse there than I've seen it in other places and other times. I think the documentary fails as a documentary because it doesn't explore the reasons why. It was partly because blacks in Vietnam perceived they were sharing an unjustified proportion of casualties, which is not true. 7,500 blacks. 46,000 Americans died in Vietnam, and 1,500 of those were non-combat casualties. But let's...
Was that ending too abrupt? Or can you cut?
I think it's all right.
Okay. Now let's see if we can get those three, the bragging, the racial polarization, and drug abuse, not necessarily in that order, into one statement, but relating to the morale problem, or relating to however, the nature of American soldiers' life in Vietnam and how in these three areas that the film is represented.
I think the great unjustness of this film is that it portrays the American soldier in Vietnam as a drug addict, a racial bigot, and a man who murdered his officers and NCOs almost at will. The hundreds of thousands of Americans who went to Vietnam and served honorably and bravely have got to be incensed at this terrible, terrible misrepresentation of their bravery and sacrifice on the battlefield.
Very good. Next to last, we talked about the polls and the we feel that the producers of the film were perhaps had a secret agenda, although I'm not sure that will benefit them.
Loaded phrase like saying I felt like a retro.
Maybe it'd be better to not do that.
Sure.
But instead to stress the fact that the generalizations that are made in the film are not supported by the polls.
When you ask what the men who served in Vietnam think of their service, the Lou Harris poll comes to mind. This poll was done in 1980 at the behest of the Veterans Administration. This indicated that 66% of the men that served in Vietnam were proud of their service. 90% of the men interviewed, and that includes 91% of those who served in heavy combat, said they were proud to have served their country. And I don't think there could be more profound disagreement on any subject than this, what we men who served there think, and were presented in this series of films.
Fine. Now, the last point on my list is relates to the comment you made regarding the editing. The editing of the section on war crimes, which by bringing up North Vietnamese versus South Vietnamese incidents, suggested a kind of a confused emotional exhaustion rather than any analytical understanding of what the problems were.
Well, when the allegation of war crimes is brought up, it should be very seriously pursued. And what this film does is it brings up the allegations and then doesn't resolve them. In the sequence that deals with the raid on the village in 1967, where the Marines were attacking enemy positions, you get the story from the side of the Marines and then from the side of the villagers. In one sequence, you're all with the Marines. In the next sequence, your sympathy is with the villagers, and it's like you're in a fast-paced tennis match. First one side and then the other. And when it was over with, I felt drained, exhausted, and very angry.
Very good, Dan. Is there anything else that, that you would like to put in?
Covered everything, I think. Appreciate having the opportunity.
Very good.
Okay.
Okay, John, continue casual conversation just for a second, and I need about two cutaways of that, so.
Okay.
We'll do that.
I'm wondering what Santoli has asked, they're talking more or less about the same thing, isn't he?
He's, you know, he's talking about the situation with the Cambodian Vietnamese refugee population. That's an area he's been very active in. And he's been, you know, to Thailand, he's been in the Cambodian.
That's right, but it's, I'm confusing that because his first book dealt everything in that.
Yeah, and you know, Al told me that when certain people in the media wanted to use his book, they only wanted to use those people who represented the sort of radical side of things, so. He covered everyone, the broad spectrum. One of the great services that he did, of course, was to produce the first oral history. And that's one of the main sort of cornerstone books. There's been a lot of imitations since then. We've got this thing called Nam by Tony Baker, which is purely an anecdotal thing, and it's apocryphal. And then just recently, a guy's done an interview with Tony Black, but it should be very interesting.
Is that for publication, do you know?
Yes, it's been published already, and I think it's called Blood. I can't remember the name of the guy that did it. I read some excerpts from it. And it's a very interesting, I you know, prejudge it, but I think it's a very interesting book. Sam's always started a